Thank you very much for that kind introduction, and I'd like to thank CETA more generally for the invitation to speak here today. I thought I'd take the opportunity this morning to talk to you about the implications of the resources boom for the Australian dollar. I should also just briefly note that a somewhat longer version of my talk is available on the bank's website. So the past decade has seen the Australian dollar appreciate by around 50% in trade-weighted terms. The appreciation was a very important means by which the economy was able to adjust to the historic increase in commodity prices and the unprecedented investment boom in the resources sector. The high nominal exchange rate helped to facilitate the reallocation of labour and capital across industries. And while that made conditions difficult in some industries, the appreciation meant that high demand for labour in the resources sector did not spill over to a broad-based increase in wage inflation. And while the high level of the exchange rate was helpful for the economy as a whole, now that the terms of trade are in decline, now that that's happened, the resources boom, and that the resources boom is turning from the investment to the production phase, lower levels of the exchange rate will assist in achieving balanced growth in the economy. So at the most basic level, the exchange rate depends on the net global demand by foreigners and Australians for all things denominated in Australian dollars relative to the demand for all things denominated in foreign currencies. Now, to the extent that it is determined in efficient, forward-looking markets, the nominal exchange rate today should embody relevant information about the future. In theory, at least, this means that although the nominal exchange rate can respond in the future to news, it shouldn't move in a way that's predictable today. However, periodically the exchange rate appears to deviate from what historical relationships with key determinants would suggest. And during such episodes, if we assume that history is a good guide, and if we assume that we have the measures of the right set of determinants, this in turn implies a potential correction in the exchange rate sometime in the future. The questions, though, are whether or not history is a good guide, have we given appropriate weight to each of the determinants, and when, if at all, might such a correction occur? The terms of trade have always been an important determinant of our exchange rate. The emergence of China onto the global economic stage led to a large and largely unanticipated rise in global commodity prices and saw the near doubling of Australia's terms of trade between about 2003 and 2011 when it peaked. This led to a significant increase in the demand for Australian assets tied to the production of commodities, reflecting an increase in the expected return to capital in the resources sector. And there was also an increase in the demand for Australian labour and materials to help build and operate these new facilities. We can trace out the sources of the additional demand for Australian dollars in terms of three overlapping phases of the resource boom broadly as follows. So during the first phase, which is the boom in the terms of trade, we see a price effect. Higher commodity prices lead to more export revenue for existing facilities. Part of that revenue accrues to Australian owners of those existing resource companies, parts paid to their workers, parts paid out as taxes. During the second investment phase of the boom, funds from offshore owners are used to pay Australian workers and resource-related firms, putting additional capital in place. These funds have accounted for much of the capital flowing into Australia over the past few years. So we can see the blue bars in the top panel, the private non-financial net inflows, and then they're broken down in the lower panel, split between mining and non-mining, and you can see the contribution coming in for the mining sector over the past few years has been very significant. And importantly, this source of demand for Australian dollars will decline as resource investment turns down. And then the third phase is we see the quantity effect. This is during the production phase of the boom. This follows from the additional export revenue generated by the new resource projects, some of which goes to the Australian owners of those new projects, some to their workers, some to pay taxes owed in Australia, and then the rest remains with foreign owners. So the effect of the higher commodity prices on the nominal exchange rate. That's going to depend on the expected sum of all of these different flows into the future. Also, there may be offsetting reductions in inflows to other sectors of the economy, particularly those adversely affected by the appreciation of the exchange rate. So clearly, determining that sum is no easy task. Looking to history can provide a guide as to what we can expect, although this is not meant to imply that past behaviour was somehow optimal, merely that it's a useful guide. One approach is to run a regression of the real exchange rate against the terms of trade and the real interest differential between Australia and the large countries with open capital markets. This relatively simple reduced form model produces reasonable statistical results over a long period, which doesn't mean that it's very accurate, just that there's no obvious better contenders. So this chart here compares the actual real trade-weighted index of the Australian dollar, the real TWI, with estimates of the medium-term equilibrium exchange rate from the model I just described. That's shown in blue. We can see that the exchange rate has, on occasions, deviated noticeably and for some time from the equilibrium estimates. So equilibrium term is in red, the actual is in blue. So we can see that blue line at times has deviated from the red periodically and for some periods. The shaded band, that shows the standard deviation of the actual exchange rate from the model estimates. However, even that perhaps suggests more precision than may be warranted, since the estimates can vary somewhat depending on the sample period that we choose. In terms of the recent experience, so we focus on the more recent years shown here, this analysis suggests that prior to the peak in the terms of trade there in late 2011, the exchange rate had increased broadly in line with what past behaviour would have suggested. But thereafter, the exchange rate drifted higher still, right up until early last year. Even though the terms of trade fell quite sharply from September 2011, and the interest rate differential had started to decline from early 2012. So the deviation of the exchange rate from the estimated equilibrium over the past couple of years, that wasn't unprecedented. Nevertheless, on a number of occasions, the bank had pointed to the high level of the exchange rate, noting that it had not declined in response to the changes in these fundamental determinants. That concern can also be explained by considering changes in the exchange rate in the context of how the economy more broadly has evolved over this period. If we think about it, an increase in demand for an economy's factors of production and a reduction in its spare productive capacity, at least relative to the rest of the world, that will tend to imply a higher relative return to capital and financial assets and hence an appreciation of the exchange rate. So what we saw following the onset of the global financial crisis was growth in Australia slowing, an employment rate which increased, but nowhere near the extent that was experienced by the most advanced economies that were in the throes of deep recessions. So from about 2007 to late 2010, the unemployment rate improved in Australia relative to that of the major advanced economies. And that was very much consistent with the appreciation of the dollar that we saw over that period. However, growth in Australia began to slow from early 2012. Indeed, the transition from the investment to the production phase of the resources boom that I mentioned, that has contributed in part to growth slowing to a below trend pace over the past year or so, where it's expected to remain for a time. Meanwhile, prospects for growth in many other advanced economies have actually improved, and accordingly, the gap between unemployment rates that had opened up earlier and the relatively strong performance of the Australian economy more generally in that earlier period, that turned around from about 2011 onwards. And again, that suggests that the exchange rate might have depreciated somewhat earlier than it did. I just want to spend a minute talking about why the model or history might be a less useful guide this time around. It's possible that history, including that embodied in the model, is less useful as a guide for this current resources boom. One point of difference this time around is the share of foreign ownership of the resources sector, which appears to have increased over time. So this means that less of the extra export revenue coming our way will accrue as profits paid to Australian residents than might have been the case in much earlier booms. Another point to make is that LNG projects, they're going to account for a large share of the additional production and exports generated by the boom in investment, as shown here in this table. Because LNG projects require relatively few workers during the production phase, less export revenue will accrue to Australians in the form of wages than would have been the case if more of the investment had been focused on other commodities. So those differences would suggest that a model drawing on those earlier experiences before this boom might overstate the equilibrium level of the exchange rate during this particular episode. Of course, working in the other direction, there are reasons to think that the equilibrium exchange rate in the model might have actually been understated over recent years. And one obvious reason, I think, is the effect of the balance sheet expansions by some major central banks in response to the weak state of demand in their economies. The expansions of their balance sheets have for some time worked to reduce yields on financial assets in these economies. And one consequence of that is that the value of their currencies is likely to have been lower than otherwise would have been the case. Now, the fact that these expansions are still playing out may have continued to provide some support to the Australian dollar beyond the time at which the terms of trade and the interest rate differential had begun to decline. Nevertheless, the signal from the Fed earlier last year that its so-called tapering, might not be too far away, that may have helped to bolster perceptions that the outlook for growth there and the return to assets in the United States was improving. And such a change in views, when combined with the earlier influence of the decline in our terms of trade and the decline in that interest rate differential, that may have helped to trigger the depreciation of the Australian dollar that we've seen from earlier last year. So let me just draw some conclusions. I think we can start by saying it's hard to know with any certainty today what exchange rates will do in the future. And yet, having said that, there are times when the exchange rate does not move in line with what historical behaviour of fundamental determinants would otherwise imply. And the implication of this is that at such times, a correction in the exchange rate might be in prospect. However, assessing how much weight to give the different determinants and when any correction might occur, that's subject to considerable uncertainty. There were good reasons to think the Australian dollar has for the past couple of years been on the high side of fundamentals, and the decline in the terms of trade from late 2011, as well as the transition from the investment to the production phase of the mining boom, those things imply lower returns to capital in Australia and a lessening of demand for Australian factors of production. It also implies a decline in what has been an important source of capital inflow over recent years. So in that regard, it was not so surprising that the Australian dollar has depreciated over the past year. I think what was somewhat surprising is that it didn't depreciate earlier. However, it may have been that the more tangible signs of improved prospects for growth in a number of advanced economies, particularly in the United States, it may have been that that helped to spur on the depreciation of the Australian dollar. And the bank has noted for some time that lower levels of the exchange rate, if sustained, will assist in achieving balanced growth in the economy and bring about a quicker return to trend growth. While it will also add a little to inflation, at least for a time, on present indications, inflation is expected to remain consistent with the inflation target. So I'll stop there and just thank you for your attention this morning. Thanks very much.
I was just going to add a couple of brief thoughts. I think the outlook for non-mining business investment, it is an important source of uncertainty. It's been quite subdued. We expect that to remain the case this year. But we do see there's reasonable prospects of it gradually picking up from around next year, supported by the things we've just heard about, low interest rates. I think the lower exchange rate, if it's sustained, the lower exchange rate since last year, that also should help activity, I think, in the traded sector. And strong population growth. We often forget about that, but it's pretty strong, likely to continue for at least a while. And I think that eats in pretty quickly to what spare capacity you might have. And then the confidence has been something of a missing ingredient on the business front. But I look at some of the recent surveys, and they're fairly recent, but they have shown signs of an improvement in business sentiment more generally. So if that's sustained, that should be a good thing. And then, look, the labour market, it's weak. The numbers yesterday confirm that. I wouldn't get overexcited about one particular month's worth of numbers. So what happened wasn't really out of line with what we'd been expecting. We keep saying we think the unemployment rate will edge up for a bit longer while growth remains below trend, but it tends to be a bit of a lagging indicator, and I think we should remember that. It tends to lag activity by something, by a few quarters at least. Anyway,
thanks, Chris.
Up there.
Please.
Maurice Newman. I guess to the panel, first of all, animal spirits certainly have lifted stock markets and asset prices generally. It remains to be seen with the accommodative monetary policies around the world done much for activity. The second thing I was going to say is that if you take the average business cycle of being between 4 and 6 years, we're now 5 years into this recovery. How much more do you think we've got to go?
If we're looking at the US, I think it's an unusual business cycle. We haven't seen or have any historical example of what the US has done in the last 5 years. The last time we saw an event of similar sort of macro and financial dimensions was obviously in the 1930s. The policy response was vastly different, and therefore the economic outcomes were vastly different. But because of that, we haven't got much evidence of what this period should look like. And my suspicion is that the way that the central bank in particular, but also that the government provided stimulus while at the same time encouraging adjustment, particularly, which I think has been phenomenal, which people should never overlook, the degree of deleveraging the US consumer has done in the last 5 years, may well elongate it. So our expectation is that the US economic upswing is only really just getting traction. Another way to think about that from a cyclical point of view is look at the housing market. It's only really now starting to lift from a construction side. Prices have been going up for a few years, but construction's only now starting to move. So I think that we're going to see at least another 2 or 3 years before we have a turn in the US cycle. And I think that fits with the sort of the current broad market expectation for interest rates, that is that the federal funds rate isn't going to go up for a couple more years, and so that suggests that it won't reach a peak for a few years after that. So why would that view be wrong? Why should we expect 3 years of uplift of US activity, which hopefully can underpin the world, is if there's some sort of shock. But I think the natural cycle isn't there. The other thing to bear in mind is the short-term cycles historically in many of these economies, the sort of the 4, 5, 6 year cycles, not recession, not ones that define recession, but the shorter ones are often inventory cycles. And we just had a little mini one in the last little while where inventory's built up and now they're being run down. So, but there's so many different forces at work that it's created, you know, the US has actually just been this sort of soft driving, but you know, gradually driving recovery. So I'm quite optimistic we've got a few years ahead. And here in Australia, I think this mining investment story has completely muddied the waters around cycles. And again, I think we're only at the start of the of a, what I'd call a traditional cycle, that is a lift in the non-mining sector.
Chris? I'll just add very briefly. I mean, I think at least in terms of thinking about the recovery from the GFC offshore, you know, the critical thing is after a financial crisis, you need to rebuild your balance sheets, and that takes quite a lot of time. That's why you don't just get a normal cyclical recovery. That process occurred faster in the US. We're seeing it in the US in terms of both business and household balance sheets in much better shape. Households helped by a rise in house prices. It started later. It started slower in Europe. But there, even there, their economy's gradually improving but very weak. And then, of course, what happened through that process is the public sector balance sheet was used to provide support one way or another to the economies and financial systems there, and that's rebuilding those is going to take a much more time, one imagines.